The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our best ever Wi-Fi all around your home, your world is limitless.
At 9.27, this is Thursday morning, 51551. Lots of texts coming in for our guest who's standing by, this great author, big fan of Mr. Anthony Horwitz. Anthony, good morning.
Good morning to you, Ryan. How are you?
It's very, very good to talk to you. Let us get straight down to business and get one thing out of the way, which is, where are you and how are you?
Well, first of all, where I am is in Greece, which I really shouldn't be. I feel a little bit guilty that I snuck out of the United Kingdom to get 3 or 4 weeks of writing time out here. I'm on a little tiny island, actually, called Morgos, in the Cyclades, and I'm not quite sure why I'm here, but that's where I am. How I am is extremely well, and all the better to be talking to you, Ryan.
Well, likewise. You know I'm a fan, so I won't pretend anything else. And congratulations on Moonflower Murders. It's a sequel in many ways to Magpie Murders, one of my favourite books of recent times. And I got the sense that you weren't going to do a sequel to Magpie Murders.
I wasn't. You're right. Magpie Murders was a standalone book, and I had no intention of doing another one in the sequence. But two things happened. The first was that my publishers really liked the book, and many others, including your kind self, did too. And it got such a good response that people were putting pressure on me to revisit the character of Susan Ryland, who is an interesting character to write about because she's not a detective, she's an editor, and she's a well-rounded, interesting person to be getting involved in a murder. And the second thing that happened was that we were making a TV show out of Magpie Murders.
Great.
And the producers, of course, the first thing they wanted to know was, would there be a sequel? And if there wasn't, could there be? So I began to think about it. And to my surprise, I found a way of playing the same trick. You know, this idea of a novel within a novel and
yeah.
a quite complicated, complex sort of murder mystery. I found a way of doing the same thing, but in a different way. And so before I knew it, I was writing it. And although the first book took me something like 10 years to write, this one took me a mere 18 months.
Wow, isn't that amazing? I mean, my youngest daughter saw me bringing home Moonflower Murders, and she said, "Is this your Christmas morning? You look so happy." I said, "Yeah, I know that sounds like plumos, but actually, it's true." She was delighted for my happiness to have it.
Well, you know, Ryan, if I may say so, I think that one of the great joys of a big, 600-page whodunit and a murder mystery full of clues and suspects and red herrings is actually just that it brings joy. But in a world which is so sort of, I don't know, confused and difficult at the moment, I'm finding the same thing, that reading and books, and particularly crime fiction, for some reason, seem to me to be the great escape.
Yeah, the mood of Moonflower Murders, much like Magpie Murders, is what I call COVID-friendly reading. It is not going to upset you in any sense. It's not going to make you have an existential crisis. It's simply going to entertain and puzzle you and bring you along a road that is just, it's pastoral and puzzling.
I think that is one of the joys of crime fiction. It's funny, isn't it, that we find relaxation and retreat in murder and violence. But that said, I mean, Agatha Christie, all those old villages all over the place where you can go in and join the sort of the residents and wonder which one of them is hiding the terrible secret, it does help to sort of draw a shield around you and to sort of protect you from reality.
Now, you talk about a book within a book. For people who didn't read the first one, obviously halfway or a third of the way into the story that's set in modern times, you suddenly produce this Poirot-style detective called Atticus Pond, an anagram, one of the greatest anagrams of all time. I won't even begin to tell people. Okay, no, seriously, every time I look at it, I go, you cheeky, cheeky man. Like, it was a really, it was a risky strategy, Anthony.
Well, it's Alan Conway, who is the author of the book within the book, not me, of course, I have nothing to do with it. Alan Conway, the author of Atticus Punt Takes the Case, does have a sort of a fondness for anagrams and acronyms and other sorts of wordplay, which incidentally, of course, also inform Moonflower Murders, because he hides messages in books, which is sort of not something I would ever do, of course.
But
not all the messages are particularly pleasant ones.
Susan Ryland, I think there's nothing more boring for people to hear a book being discussed that they haven't read necessarily, but just aspects of it, including the character Susan Ryland. To illustrate where you go with words and wordplay and puns, why did you call Susan Ryland Susan Ryland?
Because she was inspired by an editor of mine, a famous editor of Orion Books, called Susan Lamb. Everybody in the publishing business knew who she was. I'm sure you probably met her yourself a few times. A formidable figure. And a Ryland is a breed of lamb. Yeah. So hence the name. And it's always not about... But actually, you know, I've done that in my books all my life. I mean, ever since I wrote the book Stormbreaker, which was about a man called Muhammad Al-Fayed, I called him Herod Sale because he owned Harrods in London, and every Christmas there was a Herod Sale. So hiding names inside sort of that, partly to avoid lawsuits, but also for my own entertainment, is something I've done all my life.
Do you, like, when you come across one, and there's a great reveal at the end of Moonflower Murders that I'm not even going to begin to hint at, but when you're finding the words and the playfulness of it, do you kind of like punch the air and go, there's another one, or, you know, are you that excited about these things?
What excites me in a murder mystery is mainly the clues. I love hiding in plain sight the clues. I think it's the same as a magician who says, when he says pick a card, you're not noticing that his right hand has slipped, you know, taking your watch off. It's that sort of sleight of hand in words, which I most enjoy. But as for the sort of the word games and the acrostics, they take an awful lot of time to get right, because if you're going to do an anagram and to put it on the page, you've got to make absolutely sure nobody's going to spot it. Mm. And so that's what takes the time. It's getting that right.
Well, that makes me the perfect reader, because I'm one of those people who'd watch a movie and my 21-year-old daughter will say, how thick are you that you didn't get who it is early on? I get great bang for my book reading books and watching movies about these sort of things.
But for what it's worth, I never guess endings.
Oh,
I mean, you know, I write murder mysteries that are complicated and have sort of, I hope, cheerful and sort of satisfying endings. But when I'm reading murder mystery or watching it on television or film, I seldom guess it. Actually, I think that's part of the pleasure of it too. When people read my books, it's the first question I ask, did you guess it? And part of me says, please don't say you guessed it. Please say you didn't. But if they say, yes, I did, I think it's a book good for you. That was your pleasure, and I hope you enjoyed doing that.
Yeah. Just one other thing that crossed my mind, I was dying to ask you, which was, you have a scene where Susan Ryland, your editor in the book, who also becomes a sort of casual detective almost at the end. Susan Ryland is fighting. It talks about fighting with the author about whether or not they should have done things in the book within the book. Now that sounds kind of like Inception now, and I'm losing my own mind trying to explain that. But so you have yourself correcting yourself and doubting yourself. Do you know what I'm trying to say here?
Well, if you want to add a further level of confusion for your listeners and sort of, you know, meta whatever it is, when my editor came to edit the book, she said, you know, Anthony, I was going to change that section because I didn't think it worked, but then you told me that your writer should have changed it and he'd been told to and he didn't. So we got this sort of complete confusion. But you see, that's part of the joy of these books. Yeah. I never just wanted to write plain, straightforward whodunits. As much as I love that sort of stuff, I wanted to sort of write about writing as well, about the whole process of how a book is produced and why, for that matter, we even enjoy murder mystery. What is it about these sort of, you know, these stories that appeal to us all, you know, still? So in that section, you're right. My character, Susan, is criticising the book that Alan Conway wrote, some of the sort of the politically incorrect things he put in there, and some of the sort of the stylistic ideas which she doesn't think work. But that simply draws your attention to the whole process of writing and how we finally get the book out there and, you know, and into your library or bookshop.
There's a point you make in the book as well. I think it's Alan Conway, the writer of the Atticus Pun series, says about the internet. That the internet, he says, roughly speaking, it was the worst thing to ever happen to detective fiction, because if Miss Marple or Poirot, Hercule Poirot, had the internet, they'd be very short books.
Absolutely right. I mean, that's one of the things that I'm exploring a lot in my books as well, which is why, you know, Golden Age detective fiction, the pleasure of it, and why we call it even the Golden Age, is because everything is slower. It's cerebral. When Sherlock Holmes wants to solve something, he looks at people, he makes inferences, he draws connections. I mean, he sees things that we don't, and the joy of it, the pleasure of it is when he says, this man is a retired soldier. How do you know? Because of this, this, and this. But if you can just hit the button on your computer and get all the information on this person from facial recognition instantly, plus, I guess, the time that he died and everything that was wrong with him medically, all his, you know, NHS records and the rest of it, the pleasure has gone, and there's much less to write about. So for me, the cerebral detective is best off living in about 1955, which is when part of my book is set, because none of this technology exists and gets in the way.
And it allows you to have a little bit of today and a little bit of yesterday.
Indeed, so, and you know, that's the pleasure again of having a book in a book. I get two periods to write about.
Tech says, couldn't agree more about Moonflower Murders. Anthony Horowitz really trying to make it last now, as I don't want it to finish. That has to be the great compliment to a writer.
When I'm reading a book, I mean, it's my favourite thing. That you must know this, because I know you read tons, Ryan, but when you are loving a book, and so you are racing to get to the end, and at the same time there's something inside you saying, no, don't race, take it slowly, because when it's over, it's over.
Yeah.
And those two forces collide, especially about two-thirds of the book of the way through. I love that feeling.
I see you tweeted recently another favourite of mine, Robert Harris, his new book, V2, which I have beside my bed, ready to go. I'm in for a treat there.
Well, actually, I sent Robert a tweet only yesterday saying to him my one criticism of his book is that it's too short. Again, it's one of those books that if it had another 100 pages, it would have been 100 more pages to enjoy. It's a terrific book.
I have no idea where you get the time to read because of the amount of time you spend writing. Who's tickling your fancy these days, book-wise? What have you looked at that you just really enjoyed?
Well, I'll tell you a writer I've really fallen in love with, big time, though. There's a writer, an American writer called Don Boyd.
Yeah.
Do you know his work?
No, I don't.
I met him last year at a book festival, and there's this man signing books at a table, and I have no idea who he is. And an Irish writer, I think it was Steve Kavanagh, told me to get a book by him, and that he was, a writer really worth reading. So I bought one. It sat on my desk, and that was called Power of the Dog. That was the first book I read. It's the first in a trilogy about the Mexican drug cartels.
Yeah.
Extremely violent, very visceral writing, very big. These books are long. They're sort of, I guess about each one must be 700 or 800 pages.
Okay.
But anyway, I finally got around to reading it and was blown away. I mean, he writes hard-boiled crime thrillers, but he also writes description and character like nobody's business. And the last book of his, which I just finished reading a couple of weeks ago, was The Force, which is about corruption in the American police force. And if you're looking at the pictures in America of American policemen dressed up in their riot gear, shooting people left, right, and center, it feels like he goes underneath that image. He goes to the skin and to the flesh and to the heart of what it is to be a policeman in America and how corruption is all pervading. He is an extraordinary writer. So I've been reading a lot of his work recently. Another one of his incidents, I will just mention them in the same breath, is called Broken, a collection of short stories, which again are terrific.
Okay, taking note of all. Don Boyd, is that what you said his name was?
Don Winslow.
Oh.
Don Winslow. Did I say Don Boyd? I meant Don Winslow. Don Boyd is a film director. I get too confused. Don Winslow.
Because I noticed on the back of the new book, which I have here in front of me, obviously, Moonflower Murders, an author who I've been reading a lot of over COVID, which is Ragnar Jonasson.
Ragnar and I have become quite good friends. You know, one of the nice things about writing crime novels is that crime writers are extremely collegiate. I mean, they really are a family. I'm a relative newcomer because I was writing children's books for so long, but it's been great to have been welcomed by so many great crime writers. And Ragnar is somebody I've met. We went to the opera together when Opera House was still open. And we're even planning, and you're hearing it here first, to do a possible collaboration next year, to do a book that we write sort of halves of each or something. I'm not quite sure how it'll work. I like his work very, very much. There's various series of books by him, and they're all very, very well written. He was an original translator of Agatha Christie, which is where I think he learned some of his craft, but he infuses his books with a sort of the feeling of Iceland, the cold, the winds, the sort of the grey colours. It's absolutely, all in there.
Well, that's a match made in heaven. I want to see already. So I hope you pursue that. And I also see another name on the back here. But these are the people who loved the latest. Is a man we're going to have on the show soon because I gobbled up his book as well, which is Richard Osman. He did his first The Thursday Murder Club.
Yeah, well, I've read that as well. I enjoyed it very, very much.
Yeah.
It rather annoys me, actually, that somebody writes their first novel and does it in a way that is so accomplished. I mean, it took me 10 or 15 before I actually got going and sort of found my stride, but he seems to sort of hit the stride running. I enjoyed that very much, too. And I wish I could hear you say the two of you converse. Have you read it yet?
I have read it cover to cover. I thoroughly enjoyed it, yeah. I thought it was great. It was just, back to what I was saying about your books, I think that we now have, a COVID-friendly part of our brain where we need to go. And I think that these books are one aspect of it. There are certain TV series or movies that are part of it too. Some days you're just in the mood for an old Poirot, a bit of sushi, and other days, it's something else. But you just, it's just, they're like a balm, aren't they? A salve.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Suchet there, the greatest of all Poirot's, but yes, that is absolutely right. And actually, you know, again, if you're looking at the back of the book, Lucy Foley also gave me some very nice reviews, and I love her work too, for exactly the same reason.
Yeah.
Beautifully, you know, that's The Hunting Party and the Guest List.
Yes.
Two books that are terrifically well-structured and put together, and she really knows what she's doing and draws you in and surprises you at the end. You know, and it is a wonderful feeling, that sense of escape.
Yep, and Lucy's been in with us as well, because we've been trumpeting her books as well, because, again, accessible, fun. And, you know, we always say they're fun, but I want to go back to the point you made earlier on. They're bloody. I mean, people, they don't all live to tell the tale. It's not, you know, it's not a tea party.
Well, no, but, you know, I would say that in my books anyway, I don't linger on the murder. I mean, talking about Don Winslow, some of the violence in his books is you know, quite extraordinary and very high velocity. But I always say that murder is an excuse to meet people. You know, if somebody, one person, kills another person, those two people must have a very interesting relationship. You don't kill somebody for small reasons or because you're mildly annoyed with them, or you know, you don't do it with it's a big thing to do, and therefore the emotions associated with murder are always big, and therefore for me, I think again the joy of these books, and certainly in Lucy's books, yes, there are deaths, but they're not described in a way that is sort of, you know, gruesome or unsettling. And in Richard's book too, clever idea, incidentally, if you go into a old people's sort
love
of
you
know, retirement place. That's a sort of exactly what we're talking about, isn't it? Sort of not quite the real world, but just sort of slightly on the edge of it.
Actually, what I thought came out of his book, and we'll talk to him about it next week, is the humanity and reclaiming older people's story and dignity. I thought that was really smart and very kind.
Well, of course, it's going to be a big film soon as well. So it's obviously doing well across the world. And it sort of, you know, hasn't even come out yet. Why are you talking to me about his book?
Yeah, no, because,
I'm going to get jealous now.
Because you brought it up twice.
I did love it. It's great.
Now, let me ask you about Magpie Murders being made as a, what is it, a series or?
It's going to be a six-part TV series. I've written the script myself, and I can tell you it's been a tremendously difficult job. Not just to sort of narrow down 600 or 700 pages into sort of 6 46-minute episodes, but also to make it comprehensible. And also in Magpie Murders, the main character, Susan, doesn't appear until about page 300. Now, we have cast a good star. I can't yet say who.
I was going to ask my next question.
Sadly, the contract is not yet signed.
Okay.
But nonetheless, we cannot get anybody who doesn't appear for the first three episodes. You know, the Susan's got to be on page one and running forward. So what I had to do was take the book in the book and somehow spread it around and such. So it was a very difficult adaptation. It took me about 18 months to write the adaptation, which is longer even than it took me to write Moonflower.
Okay, well, still, I can't wait to see it. Kieran and Dunboyne says, could you ask Anthony, will we ever find out what happened when Foyle went to America after World War II? This is a reference to Foyle's War, which you were responsible for.
I know, I would so love to write that episode, the episode where he goes off and brings down the crooked senator who appeared in an episode called 50 Ships. I would love to write it. It won't happen because, unfortunately, the budget just won't, you know, it's too expensive for television at the moment. And anyway, as I'm sure you know, making TV is one step away from impossible at the moment. I talk about the adaptation of Magpie Murders, but, you know, if you can't get insurance to make television, and at the moment you can't make TV.
Anthony, in Magpie Murders, is Crina Hutton on page 312 and another rude anagram?
It is. And well spotted, whoever has said that is. That was, you know, I wanted to say that although Alan Conway's anagrams and acronyms are nearly all revealed at the end of the book, I always put in half a dozen more.
Oh, that's great.
Just for people like whoever has phoned you, Ryan, with that observation.
Well done.
To say yes.
I love this. Just about to crack open Anthony's book, The Word is Murder, another beaut. The pleasure of lifting the cover of a new book. I mean, there's another fellow reader. That idea of cracking open a new book, just going, page one, here we go. And is Hawthorne back? Are we back for more?
Daniel Hawthorne is going to reappear. In fact, I've been out in Greece, I mean, have been working most of the time, and that is on the third in the series of the Daniel Hawthorne novels, which is going to be set on an island where he's invited to a literary festival and where very quickly a murder takes place. And I'm about 30,000 words in at the moment of about 80 or 90,000. I'm loving it. There's a time when you're writing, you know, when you just, everything is working and it's all pouring out and it just seems to be completely effortless. And that's sort of, you know, that's a wonderful feeling to have. And so that book will be finished hopefully by Christmas and should be out next year.
Ah, tremendous. Another reason to be excited about all of that. Met Anthony at Writers Week in Listowel, says Neil Brosnan, a few years ago. A lovely man. Think he enjoyed our impromptu music session in John B's yard. I hope you did. And could you thank Anthony for Moonflower for Moonflower Murders halfway through it? A pure joy, and I've read all his adult books, says Jane Keane. Another says, I've always been an avid reader, but life has got in the way with new care commitments courtesy of COVID, so I've never read so little. However, a big thank you to Anthony for kickstarting my reading love, loving Moonflower Murders novel. He must have had great fun writing it. And another says, I was at the Boris Festival, which is important actually to your novel, last year, and one of the highlights was attending Anthony's talk. Hugely entertaining, as well as fascinating insight into his approach to writing. Here's hoping Boris will be back. Next year in all its glory. And I think it was the Boris Festival you told us before that that kind of features in Moonflower Murders.
But indeed, so I was thinking about Moonflower Murders when I went to Boris, a festival which incidentally I loved. And the moment I saw that beautiful house, I just, in my imagination, dug it up, carried it to Suffolk, replanted it, and put the murder in it. And even on the first floor of Boris House, if anybody ever visits there is a brooch on a table on display there, and it's called a figeen, a word I have been unable to find anywhere else. But it is apparently a sort of a 15th or 16th century Irish brooch, and it also plays a part in my story. So that was a very inspirational visit. And it also reminds me, incidentally, how sad I am that we are not able to do these talks and visits and to meet each other and to behave normally because of the circumstances we're in and how much I do miss them.
Well, it'll all come back again, as well you know, Anthony, and we look forward to seeing you back on the island as soon as things get calmed down a little. In the meantime, thank you so much for Moonflower Murders. Absolutely a joy to read, and you know, just keep it coming, won't you?
Always a pleasure talking to you, Ran, and I certainly don't intend to stop.
Okay, look forward to it. Anthony Harwood's joining us live this morning, and thanks indeed for all those great texts and comments in about him. A lot of fans of his out there. If you haven't read Magpie Murders, you're better off buying that first and then moving on to Moonflower Murders, and I'd just be shocked if you were disappointed. Wonderful reads. It's 8 minutes to 10.